on this episode of Optimal Health Uncovered.
If you're, I know we're going to be talking about running in half marathons and marathons. If you're already training and doing these things, you're already doing something right. There is something that is working well for you. And sometimes the things that aren't working well is you just need to become aware of it or recognize if there's a language or something that you can label it as in order to help you.
Hi guys, welcome to Optimal Health Uncovered, Marathon Mondays edition. I'm Britt Gunser.
And I'm Brenda Copley.
Once again, we want you to think of us as your post-race banana, but before the race, helping you to prepare for your fall race as best as possible. Today we're digging into a topic that I know I can say I'm least familiar with, which is mental performance. Instagram posts are always saying things like running is 90% mental and 10% physical. I literally saw that yesterday with varying completely made up ratios. We spend hours, weeks, months with our physical training, but how do we improve our mental strategies?
So today we're going to touch on some of the mental traps that we can fall in to with training and racing, and who better to do it than with our very own mental performance consultant, Ariana Martignetti. Ariana, why don't you take a moment to tell us a little bit more about yourself? Where did you go to school and what was your experience prior to working at Performance Optimal Health? And lastly, how did you get interested in mental performance consulting?
Yeah, thank you both for having me. I'm happy to be here. So I did my master's in sport and exercise psychology at Western Washington University. Then I did my doctorate in sport and performance psychology at the University of Western States, where I also received a master's in clinical mental health counseling.
Wow.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Thank you. Yeah, a lot of school. I'm happy to be done. And prior to Performance Optimal Health, I was a collegiate professor for 4 years at a small private college in New York. And I got into mental performance and sports psychology because of my own experiences as an athlete. And I had experienced a lot of mental barriers and struggles that I didn't know I could have gotten help for or that there was a language for until I took my first sports psychology class in undergrad. And it was very validating. And I was no longer a competitive athlete, but I was still able to remain in the sports world. So I went the sports psychology route.
That's really cool. I feel like that follows actually a similar pathway of myself as a personal trainer. And I feel like I've talked to a lot of physical therapists that follow a similar path where they were involved in sports and maybe they got injured or they just, for whatever reason, had some sort of exposure to a healthcare professional or whatever it may be, and then really just wanted to be a part of that in some way after they finished their sport or after they finished college. And it's cool to hear kind of a similar pathway, but from the mental performance side.
What sport did you play?
I played softball.
Awesome.
Yeah, I grew up playing an array of sports. I did swimming, I did basketball, and then specialized in softball.
Cool.
So one thing that we've always asked, like a lot of our other podcast participants, has been just something relevant to them for what they did, either for preparing for their workout or for what they ate before their workout. So for you, what types of mental training strategies did you either use to prepare for your workout or to start your day off on the right foot for today or your most recent workout?
Mm-hmm. I usually like to start out by identifying what my goal is for the particular workout that I'm doing. So especially for runs, 9 times out of 10, my goal is to go straight through without stopping, versus if I'm looking more for sprints and slowing down and things like that. So I identify the goal that I want, and then I try and eliminate things that will get in the way of me not being successful that are within my control to start. So if my shirt is uncomfortable, if my shorts are falling down, and I would attribute my bad runs to those sorts of things, I make sure that's all in check, and then I'm ready to go. Music helps me a lot, and then I set short-term goals as I'm running, kind of a mental game that I play with myself, which I'm happy to get into in a little bit, but to start things off, that's what I do.
Actually, that would be fun. Let's touch on that in later in the conversation of what mind games we play with ourselves when we're out there for hours.
Totally. Yeah. So the first question that we have that's really specific towards running is during training, there's obviously good days and bad days, and sometimes even bad weeks. Do you have any mental strategies that you can put into place to try to decrease the cascade effects of that bad day or week so that it doesn't just extend and you're able to really just recognize the impermanence of those thoughts as you're going through it.
Yeah. But I'm going to answer that with a question and ask you both, what are you attributing to be a bad run or a bad week? How are you defining that? Mm-hmm. What is playing a role in that?
So me personally, I'm just going to answer this first because I'm coming off of what I would identify as or qualify as a bad week. When I'm feeling more stressed about the running that I'm going to do than I usually would. So usually I find it as a de-stressor, something that I essentially look forward to, except for really hard workouts. And I found myself really dreading them and just really not wanting to do it. And then when I would go out and do it, I would try and make it a little bit easier for myself. So that's how I would identify it.
Yeah, I would explain it for me personally as I'm comparing it to a past experience with a similar run or training experience. So it's like, okay, normally I'd be able to run nine minute mile pace for this, but now I'm only able to run it for 10 minute mile pace, and my perceived experience is worse than what it has been in the past potentially.
Okay. So for you, Britt, I'm hearing it's happening before you're even starting because you're dreading it. And then for you, Brendan, it's you've already finished it and now you're comparing it to a past performance.
That's correct. Yeah.
So Britt, to start for you, I would consider what's contributing to yourself that day at that time that's making this not fun anymore. Like, can you identify what had been different in that day or in that prep that's now changing how you're perceiving what you're about to do?
Yeah. You know, mental performance is something that I super, super struggle with, but this aspect of it, I can identify, okay, I slept terribly the night before. I have three things that I'm behind on at work, and I know that's in the forefront of my brain. I'm dealing with personal stresses as well. So that compounding was just like running is adding to it rather than helping me. Usually I'll find myself relaxing on my run, but I found that I was like thinking about those things on my run and it was ruining it. So I knew that external circumstances were what were causing that.
Okay. Gotcha. So you were having a difficult time being present on your current run.
Yeah.
Given everything else.
Yep.
Okay. So I could imagine that post run, you're probably saying things like, and correct me if I'm wrong, you know, that one really wasn't good because I just kept thinking about all I have to do for work and all of it. So your attributions, I like to look at this, or researchers, I should say, is how are you explaining the performance you just did? And that will end up having an effect on your future expectations or your outcomes. So what I'm hearing for Britt is she is attributing this to all previous stressors, not being able to be mindful. And so those are things that are within her control and are also coming from herself. So if it didn't go well and she's attributing it to things within her control and it didn't go well, a future run could go either way dependent upon how she's managing those stressors. So generic answer would be to try and catch yourself while you're experiencing that on your run. And it might take a little bit of self-talk to try and convince yourself that you are only on this run for a certain amount of time. You took the time out of your day to get here and you're doing it. So how are you going to best help yourself in order to give that better run for yourself?
Yep.
Brendan, for you, in terms of comparing to past performances, so past performances can help us or hurt us. They're one source that can really contribute to our self-efficacy because we can rely on evidence that we've done something before. And in this particular instance, I'm looking at it for you as far as an outcome. So you are looking at what the amount of time was for your run. Can you identify or acknowledge parts of your run that either were better or worse, independent of the time you ran it in?
Yes. And in those moments, I think I'm more just being present with, you know, the scenery, or I'm just basically not letting my thoughts kind of get the best of me. It's just more enjoying either a conversation with a friend or other aspects of it that are positive, opposed to focusing on the performance aspect of how that run is going per se.
Okay. So you're bringing up a good point because this is now coming down to where's our focus and where's our attention going. For endurance athletes, it can be helpful to do associative and dissociative cognitive strategies. Associative would be paying attention to internal sensations, our breathing, if we're fatigued, how our legs and arms are feeling, how our body's feeling, and dissociative is more of that distraction. So anything else that's taking away from our body, the scenery, talking to people, listening to music. A mix of that can be helpful on long runs because you're switching up your concentration and attention. And it's also important to keep in mind how much cognitive effort you're putting into that, because cognitively it can be tiring when you're physically, you know, exerting yourself. And then B would be, how is it going to best help you achieve whatever goal you might have set up for yourself as you're continuing to run? So recognizing whether it's serving as a distraction in an unhelpful way, or if it's serving as a distraction in a helpful way. And you also had mentioned something, you know, when thinking of something like the time, that's more of the outcome versus the process, which is you're spending most of your time within the process versus just looking at that time at the end. Of course, that's a long-term goal. You're trying to achieve something, but just recognizing whether that's controlling more of the process versus actually staying within the process.
No, that makes total sense. And so a lot of things that you mentioned, well, a little bit, you mentioned negative self-talk and like how we need to get out of that and strategies that we can use to kind of quiet our brains and focus on something else. What happens when that negative self-talk, separately from what I just said, what happens when it starts before the run even starts, whether it be a workout or a race that's scary to you, like anxiety-wise, that you're super nervous about and you're fearful that you won't be able to execute?
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you brought up that it ends up contributing to anxiety or that's scary to you, because I don't really advocate for fixing and changing all negative self-talk, because for some individuals, it could be very motivating. And culturally speaking too, negative self-talk and negative feedback can be helpful for athletes. So when it comes to it being unhelpful or inhibiting you, then, and this takes mental skill and effort, it takes effort, easier said than done, but at least I could give a few tips. So self-awareness is huge. You need to recognize that it's even affecting you in such a way that it's now feeling like you are inhibited and can't do it. So you can either try to change that, which would mean identifying what are you specifically saying to yourself? What is it about this run that you're actually scared about? Is it something that's within your control? Like you're not sure, you know, if you ate right or you feel physically prepared, or is it something out of your control? You don't know what the rest of the route is going to look like. And if it is those unknowns, those out of your control things, then bringing your focus back to what is going to be within your control can make you feel like you are in more control of your thoughts than they are for you. And even external outside cues can be helpful, because when we get stuck within a rumination or a negative cycle of our self-talk, we are internal. And when we're running, we need to be looking at what's in front of us. It's this shift between external and internal. So if we're all up in our head and we need to be looking at what's out in front of us, then an external cue can sometimes help bring us out of that. And for some people too, when it comes to pre-performance routines, when things are so inconsistent and out of our control, our pre-performance routines can remain consistent. Whether that's you wear the same watch, you have the same band, something that you can externally bring your attention to ground yourself and get yourself ready to go is one way.
That's really cool. I feel like there's so many concepts that are being applied, and the fact that there's a cue for it is really, really neat, because I feel like a lot of times I'll understand from a conceptual standpoint what my brain needs to be doing, but then to actually have something that's an actionable step is a really potentially awesome thing to have.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, because I know we're going to be talking about running in half marathons and marathons. If you're already training and doing these things, you're already doing something right. There is something that is working well for you. And sometimes the things that aren't working well is you just need to become aware of it or recognize if there's a language or something that you can label it as in order to help you.
You've tied some of this already into it, potentially when you're mentioning your thinking about your future performance, but just the concept of pace management and trying to get an understanding of where your expectations may be for a race versus when you're actually in the race, making sure that you're not just completely swept away by the crowd, or like, is this all going to tie back to your cues, or is there anything specific to this concept that applies to so many runners where they're in the marathon and they just get completely swept away, or, you know, they are too conservative and they don't end up reaching their peak performance as a result of it?
And that happens in workouts too, right? So like something that I talked about with my coach once was he would assign me these like general pace guidelines for a workout day. Hit these target paces for this period of time with a recovery in between. And I would think about it and go, okay, if that feels hard, that's bad. So I would try and go faster, and then that would feel even harder. And then I would be in this like crazed state of trying to make what should feel hard feel easy. Mm-hmm. It kind of all ties together. So if you could talk on that a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. One thing that you had mentioned, it's reminding me of, it's called social facilitation theory, which is being in the presence of others can increase our arousal levels, energy levels. You could think of it like activation levels on either well-learned tasks or tasks that we feel competent in. So right off the bat, you're getting ready to run with a bunch of other marathoners and half marathoners. So you're already in the presence of something that's going to change within you and affect your performance. And I bring that up because, and the opposite side of that is that when we're in the presence of others on tasks that we don't feel quite competent in or that are very difficult, it could actually end up inhibiting our performance or make us not perform as well. So the takeaway is recognizing what your own arousal levels are and how are you best managing that. So you would, Brendan and Britt, you would each know better than me whether you're pushing it right out of the gate, or though maybe now you're a little bit more aware of that's what's actually happening with you, and how best to manage your energy and your pace. So I'd be curious to know a little bit more of how you're doing it and what you think is getting in the way of that.
Yeah. So for me, I feel like I'm reasonably good at pacing, actually. Mm-hmm. That sounds so cocky.
He's extremely good at pacing. Like he had like an even split for his marathon recently. Like
it was perfectly
yeah, even.
Like 129.22.
Yeah, I'll talk to you about showing up and blowing up.
But there are definitely moments where I've just, for whatever reason, I think underserved myself right by at the end, like maybe potentially went out just a little bit too conservative. And I think I could have gone out harder because I'm always amazed by the potential arousal that's caused from the crowd. And I think it in workouts, you're never going to potentially get to the point of how excited you are for the race, and just you're not tapering in the same way, you're not preparing in the same way for a workout as you are for a race. So I'm always surprised by how much faster you can go in a race compared to and everything else that you've experienced leading up to that time. It's so interesting that you mentioned that there are certain situations that, you know, arousal leads to a positive experience and certain situations that, you know, that's the potential exact opposite can happen. When I was doing Taekwondo when I was younger, I would go to these competitions. I knew the patterns down like so, so well. But in the competition, for whatever reason, I would freeze. And I wasn't, you know, performing to my best ability. Like I could tell, like I was doing better in practice than on the actual performance day. But for running, for whatever reason, the exact opposite. Crowds would hype me up. Like I would totally be like the best version of myself when I was running and when I was as part of like being part of a crowd and like the people that I loved were around me and supporting me, the exact opposite for Taekwondo, which I thought was fascinating that you said that.
Mm-hmm. And one thing that you also noted was that you don't really know what it's going to feel like until you're there and it's the day of. So even if that's the unknown of it, the known of it is being able to manage that arousal level. So in other words, the techniques that can help either lower it or increase it depending on where you need it to be when you're ready to go out of the gate or when you're trying to pace during the run. So whether that's taking diaphragmatic breaths, if you need to lower yourself down, or changing your music to hype yourself up, doing jumping jacks, increasing your heart rate, things of that sort.
And then countering that. So that's talking about the unknown. Let's say you do know this. You've done this exact distance race before and you've executed it poorly. You've failed at whatever goal you were attempting. How do we go into it with a clean slate and a clean mind of like not being just fearful that it's going to repeat?
Mm-hmm. A lot of it would come from your preparation. So how much of your preparation are you still considering all of that while you're training for this? Because if you're carrying it with you all the way up until the day, it's probably going to be a lot harder to get out of it when the time comes. So you're bringing up a good point where, and you know, you were talking about, when do we train the mental side of things? When does this come in? And during all that training and preparation is when you can be working on these things. So many athletes really rely on their prep and their preparation for their confidence in order to get through it. So I would be working on that during the entire prep side.
Are there any other specific strategies that you recommend that are more of a daily practice that could be applied to just whatever running, you know, workout that you have, or even just for general life? Like for me, I'm really into meditation. So I find that that just sets my day into a good pattern. Or the times that I think I've raced the best were times where, you know, I was able to meditate before and really just like put my mind in a good headspace before I even went into that run. Are there any other strategies though that you would recommend that are more of a daily practice that could be implemented?
Yeah. Biggest thing would be finding what you like the most and what works for you the most, like for you with the meditation. Other things could be imagery, also known as visualization, depending on how often you'd want to implement and practice that. Others would be certain relaxation techniques, whether it's diaphragmatic breathing or doing meditation, mindfulness practices. So mindfulness is one that could be a daily way of being. So just checking in with yourself, being in the present moment, non-judgmentally. It could be while you're eating. It could be while you're on a walk. It could be when you wake up in the morning and just are sort of taking in what's about to happen for the day. So that could be more of a way of being. We constantly are talking to ourselves, whether we're aware of it or not. So starting a log on specific or the more common self-talk statements you might have throughout the day in order to create that awareness for yourself to recognize whether that needs to be changed or if that's what's contributing to you doing well on a daily basis and you need to keep that in your back pocket to either make it a cue word or something quick when you need to bounce back from something.
You mentioned visualization, which is something that Brendan and I were talking about last week. And I think it's unique to endurance sports. We were talking to one of our colleagues who is a collegiate diver, and she was talking about how visualization is huge for them, for depending on what kind of dive they have to do. They're either visualizing, obviously, the execution of it, and they're doing things to either calm themselves down, or if they have to have a big leap leading into it or jump leading into it, they're hyping themselves up, getting their heart rate up. It's easy to imagine visualization of something that happens in 3 to 5 seconds. It's harder to imagine, okay, how does a runner visualize a long training run or a marathon? Mm-hmm. So can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, great point. One thing, or the biggest thing that I would want to mention is that it doesn't always need to be the image of it. It could be that kinesthetic sense. How is it feeling for you? So if it's not possible to always visualize what the route is going to be, you can still visualize how your body's going to feel while you're doing it, what it looks like, what you might want to be thinking with it. So you brought up, they might use it to hype themselves up or calm themselves down. So depending on what your visualization or imagery goal might be, it could be to increase confidence, to relax, to give yourself a sense of familiarity of something that you might be worried about. And we talked a bit about preparation. So this is also a form of preparation that can be in your back pocket on those times where, Britt, you mentioned, you know, the negative self-talk or feeling scared and things like that. And Brendan, you talk a bit about past performances. So even imagining yourself during a time where it was going well for you to give you that that sense of you've done it before and you can do it now. And one thing I also want to mention is that it takes practice because there are certain ways that you could go about it. There are these internal or first person perspectives, and there are also these external or third person perspectives. So sometimes athletes will imagine themselves through their own eyes as if they have a GoPro on their head, just like we're all looking out into the world right now. That's that internal perspective. That is really useful to try and get that kinesthetic sense or that feel because you're within your own body. And then that external imagery perspective would be more of if you're an outside observer watching yourself do something. So as you would watching film or things like that. So that can be helpful for if you're trying to correct a skill or seeing someone do it well, and then sort of go to that. So it definitely takes practice to do that and also be able to control your images. So feeling like it's in real time and not slow motion, because you are going to be performing in real time. So
when would you recommend someone do this? So I've been reading, you know, I read books about this. I listen to podcasts about this, but yeah, it's tough to know, like, am I executing this correctly? And I know that's a super subjective question, but the last race I had, I sat down for a little bit the night before when I was starting to feel anxious, and I was just like sitting on the edge of my bed, eyes closed, picturing the moments that I knew were going to be hard. It was a course that I was familiar with, so mm-hmm. I knew where there were going to be hills. I knew where the end-ish was, and I was picturing myself running there, feeling uncomfortable and trying to get mm-hmm. through it. And there was, although the race went okay, there was no moment during it that I went, oh yeah, I prepared for this. Mm. You know, mm-hmm. So are we expected to feel like, oh, I visualize this, it should feel better? Or is it going to be kind of a subconscious thing? And is there a timing that you would suggest to practice these things?
Mm-hmm. So it doesn't replace physical skill, which I feel like I just need to mention.
Darn.
But again, if you are already in a position where you're about to run a half marathon or a marathon the next day, you're doing something right. You're doing something right. So when it comes to, you know, maybe this expectation that it wasn't what you thought it was going to be when you're actually out on the race, that's okay. I think part of that would be maybe a different mental skill could have been more helpful, or it's a matter of what was the process like for you while you were doing it? So I would have been curious to know, you know, what setting did you do it in? How much did you prepare the image beforehand? In other words, I know some athletes that usually like to write a script out and then kind of go from the script, or they just go offhand of what's in their mind. And another thing might be, maybe it didn't feel as controlled of your images or as vivid, really trying to incorporate the audio, the visual, the smell, the auditory, the, I already said that, sorry, the kinesthetic sense. So trying to incorporate as many senses as possible for that.
One thing that I thought was interesting with Britt is she was saying, she mentioned she used visualization more for when she thought something was going to go poorly or like facing a hard moment in the race. I remember hearing a story about how Michael Phelps had visualized like 1,000 times in his head what would happen if his goggles filled with water, mm-hmm. and he ended up basically still setting the world record because he had visualized it 1,000 times in his head, and it happened,
right? Yeah,
he still was able to just have a peak performance. Mm-hmm. Is there value in visualizing also this sort of alternative approach of like when things are going poorly, what do we do? Opposed to like this perfect situation, like we're trying to manifest this.
Visualizing the podium.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Thanks for mentioning that, because there is a fine line between visualizing poor performances in a way that's going to hurt you, where you're not going to want to have those poor performances, and then visualizing things that could happen and then being able to manage it while you're visualizing it. So I don't know of that story of Michael Phelps, but I would imagine that while he was visualizing that with his goggles, he was also working through, okay, what comes after this? What am I going to keep doing in order to manage this? Because that is also I remember, oh gosh, it's bringing back memories. With swimming, it was my swim cap and my goggles. And I used to think, if that happens, I'm done. That's it. And of course, didn't. If only I knew what I knew, you know, but being able to visualize how to manage those things that might cause you anxiety or could happen realistically while you're performing, and then how to work through it.
That's really cool. And it's really cool that you're able to potentially break that down into two different pieces, opposed to just like, okay, this is all of visualization training. You should do it. It's great. It's like, No, there's actually some particular pieces of this that you can really piece apart and use in certain situations.
Yeah, for sure.
So other than, I mean, we talked about people trying to prepare, but maybe perseverating on possible negative outcomes. What are some other mental traps that you find that endurance athletes suffer through or from while they're training or in the race?
Mm-hmm. Pain.
Yeah.
Fatigue. And being able to manage that and recognize how much focus, energy, and concentration you're going to put on that. And I think that's why in the research, it shows that utilizing both the associative and the dissociative cognitive strategies could be helpful. Again, focusing on the actual internal sensations with your body or cardiorespiratory experiences, physiological, and then the distraction part of it if you need to get yourself through the race. I'm not saying athletes need to play through pain. I don't, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is for those that have trained and prepared and put in the physical work to get to the point that they are, and they're experiencing natural uncomfortableness and pain and the fatigue that comes with it. So utilizing both those strategies.
Yeah. One phrase that I hate hearing is get comfortable with being uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And just from our short conversation here, it sounds like, no, it's not going to be comfortable. You have to learn to manage that.
Yes.
Internally and externally, rather than just go, this is uncomfortable, I'm okay.
Yes.
Right.
And I think a lot of people think so much of it is just be positive, and it's not realistic, because when you're in it and you don't actually believe you can do something, I got this, I can do it, then that's not going to help you, because of how much our beliefs affect our performance. So in those situations, it could be helpful to be instructional. So, okay, what can I do right now? What do I need my legs to do? What do I need my breathing to do? Am I feeling in control of my breathing? So you don't need to tell yourself, I can do this, I can get through it. You can tell yourself something else, because that's where your focus and attention is now going in order to keep yourself moving.
That's interesting. Especially one of my questions was going to be, what do you do when the wheels are starting to fall off? Because you can have 18 great miles in a marathon, then all of a sudden you feel like you're hit with a truck. And it is hard to remain positive in that. So instructional thinking is a totally different way of thinking than I've ever done. I don't know about you, Brendan, but I'm always thinking in the moment, just get through it, next mile, get through it, next mile, and suffering through it, rather than thinking, okay, here's what I can control.
Mm-hmm. We were mentioning some of those mind games that we might play with ourselves.
Yeah.
So the instructional self-talk, there's goal setting self-talk, there's motivational self-talk. And I'm thinking for something like that, I don't run marathons, but in my runs that I do, I set myself up for short-term goals. So if it's a route that I regularly run, I'll say, okay, get to this spot. If it's a route that I don't usually run, then I'll pay attention to the scenery, or a part of a song, I'll say, get to the end of this song.
Yeah.
It's either get to the end of this song or get to that part on the route, and then reassess what you want to do. And I'll usually get to one of them before I thought I was going to get to, and I'm like, oh, I could keep going.
Right.
So having those in your back pocket to keep yourself moving forward.
What is it about that works? Because I find, and I think you probably do too, that breaking things down into like more digestible thoughts. So going, okay, I have to run 16 miles today. I have to run 4 miles 4 times. Why is that easier to think about for us?
Part of it could be that you are setting yourself up for a more manageable goal. And actually, that's part of it, but it's the process of it. So a lot of times outcome can increase our anxiety, and anxiety might not work for all of us. So when we are breaking it down, we're focusing more on the process of it. And then when we reach these short-term goals, it can help sustain our motivation, because we are experiencing already reaching that part of the goal. Good way to look at this is everyone wants to win, right? Especially team sports, so much emphasis on winning. You can play the best game of your life and still lose, because the outcome is either win or lose. Someone else might be involved. So the outcome might be a certain time that you're trying to hit, and you might not hit that certain time. Along the way, you've hit all of your short-term goals though. And I'm not saying that, I'm not saying that you wouldn't want to not reach your outcome. What I'm saying is breaking it down into those smaller achievable goals as you're moving along can help sustain that motivation in order to work towards that longer term goal.
How do you remember to segment things into those smaller pieces? Like, that conceptually makes sense. In the times that I've done it, it was really, really helpful. How can you, in the moment when you are going through all that discomfort, just change your mindset towards this more appropriate way to think about things? Is it the cues, or are there other things that can tie into it, like those external cues or the internal cues?
That's where the work comes in. That's where the work on your own mental skills and mental game comes in. We're talking about a lot of strategies. Everything's not going to work for everybody. So it's recognizing what you're already doing or not doing well, or think you could be utilizing, and then trying to implement that in ways that's going to work best for you.
Is that where it's also helpful to really truly use a coach, to have that kind of like almost constant feedback too, of like, hey, here's what worked, here's what didn't work, and almost to hold yourself accountable to putting yourself into some of these strategies potentially?
Yeah.
Like a mental performance coach specifically, not just, you know, a running coach.
Yeah, potentially. My philosophy really comes from increasing self-awareness, because I believe that the athletes that I work with have it within themselves to change and perform better or maintain performances. Sometimes they just need a little bit of help uncovering what's going well. Like Brendan, you had mentioned that you had perfect pacing, and I didn't even get to ask.
Perfect.
I didn't even get to ask what was so perfect, because out of the 99% of it, you brought up right at the end that might not have been, you know, the one time where you didn't pace well. So, not to call you out again, but
yeah, totally. Yeah. So was the question, just so I have an understanding, like, in what situations do I not pace appropriately? In what situations do I do set pace appropriately? Are you saying within that marathon, where did I have a pitfall potentially?
No. What did you do so well that got you to pace perfectly?
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. What did you do?
Well, I think some of it was luck, honestly. I think part of it was, I don't know. Like, I was just running how I felt like I could. Like, I felt like I was staying within a range that I could sustain for a very long period of time. Like, I didn't.
There you go. Not luck. Yeah. You're doing
That's
it.
That's control.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess practice too, right? I had run my long runs leading up to the marathon in a way that I think appropriately gradually increased my long run pace, so that I felt like when I was in the moment, I was able to think back to those experiences and just stay within my body in a way that felt like I wasn't overexerting as I was going through the motions.
There you go. That was, yeah.
Bravo.
Oh, geez. Okay. So I want to talk about at some point, and this is maybe a good segue, because I hate talking about myself.
I love talking about Brendan.
Me too.
What physiologically is happening when you are potentially using some of either visualization strategies or some of these segmenting strategies? What physiologically is happening when you're either kind of upregulating or downregulating, or utilizing some of your mental performance strategies?
Yeah, good question. So it's associated with different parts of our body that are starting to get activated. So an increase in our heart rate, depending on if it's going well, we might be experiencing some muscle tension. So if we're trying to relax, then we're decreasing the muscle tension in order to be a little bit more loose to perform better. And I think it's important to go back to thinking about our cognitive effort and how much energy we might be expending mentally. And you would both know this better than me while you're in your marathons. But recognizing how much of that might be taking a toll, and whether you need to be paying attention or focusing on other things rather than trying to talk yourself out of certain stuff.
Okay. So we've gotten through training. We've gotten through trying to practice our mental strategies, but ultimately we still come down to this one day, this one race, and our competitor, unless we're in, you know, Brendan's field, is ourselves. How do we manage that? How do we manage the pressure of going against yourself and kind of your whole performance on one race?
Yeah. So thinking again about this process versus the outcome. So the outcome is so useful as a long-term goal to have ourselves look forward to something. This is what we are working towards. This is what we are trying to achieve. And then breaking down this entire process of it. So, you know, you mentioned that you're doing all this training for all this time, then it's boiling down to this one race. So some of it is coming from finding the value in all of the training and the process of it to then get to the outcome and still see it as a part of everything that's came before it. And I'm thinking about this from the perspective of like overtime hockey. And it's like someone blows it, puck goes in, and that's it. And they want to blame it on the one person. And it's like, you just played three periods of a game, got to overtime. Like it wasn't just that one person that blew it. And that also comes back to this practice and the skill of how that's affecting you and how you're viewing the process, how much weight you're putting on it. And, you know, it is a very real thing that when it comes to our energy and our mood and our activation levels, it's affecting us in such ways. And then it ends. And then it's like we come down from it. And there's research on ultra marathon runners and how their vigor and tension was really affected 30 days post their ultra marathon. So even recognizing that from a mood and a hormonal standpoint, you're really being affected by what you're doing when it's coming down to that day.
So we like to end it on a fun note. And hopefully we'll have you back again. So this is like a temporary end, but so you played softball.
Yes.
You got a walk-up song.
Yes.
What's your walk-up song?
It was Jake Owen, 8 Second Ride.
All right. Jeez. Unexpected. Asked her this in the beginning of the session and she didn't tell us. So it's a secret for all of us.
I feel like music says a lot about a person and it's always certain contexts, but yeah.
Certain contexts. Absolutely. So thank you so much, Ariana, for joining us. This has been lucrative for Brendan and I for selfish reasons and also for whoever's listening to this. I'm sure that's training for something.
Thank you for having me. Love talking with you guys and I look forward to, we'll be together again soon.
We will. Thank you guys for listening to Optimal Health Uncovered Marathon Mondays. We'll see you next time.